Today we're going to be talking about some maybe not so fun stuff for some people. I was incredibly happy that, let me go get this guy. Jay hasn't walked up the stairs. He feels all alone. Probably not many of us, right? If you're good at something If you enjoy the process of something, if that's what you're drawn to, who's going to take a shortcut? Probably not many of us, right? Because we enjoy the process. We enjoy the perfection. We just enjoy it. So if we're good at it and we enjoy it, why take a shortcut? No reason, right? People take shortcuts at things they are bad at. People justify sins that they struggle with. Because do you think it was a straight man that pointed this out? No, right? People who struggle with things will find a shortcut. People who struggle with sins look for the loophole. In the weight room, I enjoy some lifts and I don't enjoy others. So when I'm doing the stuff that I don't enjoy, how hard is it for me not to cut a set to 7 reps or 6 reps or cut a whole set off of what I'm doing? It's hard because I don't enjoy it. That's human nature, right? We take shortcuts, we cut corners, we justify, and I hope y'all see the link between the two. Justification and shortcuts are the same thing. Right? Because what do you have to do to take a shortcut? In your head, you have to justify it or you're not going to do it. So what we see from people is this justification of things that they struggle with. Now, this movement, the LGBTQ, however many other letters have been added on since I've stopped paying attention, has grown a lot. So I'm not saying that it's all people taking shortcuts anymore. That brings the second part of our psychology lesson. Who probably brags on their kids way too much? Because you love them. Right? And so what are our favorite things to talk about our kids? The good things, right? Hey, he's really good at this. He's really good at that. Maybe even bolster up the things that he's not so good at and be like, well, even sometimes, right? We get in this track of trying to just bolster this up. And so what I think we have now in the second part of my psychology lesson here is what we have now is people who love other people and who love God that are now also trying to justify living in sin. Does that sound, if you take off the trying to justify sin part, does that sound bad? People who love God and love other people. No, it doesn't. But when you stop speaking truth for the sole purpose that you love somebody else, you're missing the whole point. Right? We're missing it. And so what people do, and guys, it should make us nervous. Sorry, I gotta get this gun out of my mouth. It should make us incredibly nervous when people are justifying things that are clearly wrong throughout the Bible, Old Testament, New Testament. That's not our place to justify, it's our place to speak truth. And truth has been diminished in my lifetime substantially, in y'all's lifetime even more. But I want us to see that it's human nature. It's human nature. These people who think that they're doing good because because they're loving on everybody, right? They're doing this, they're doing that. They're missing the point. And why? Because they're taking something that doesn't say, and we're going to go over it. They're taking something out of context, not clear, and they're washing away things that are incredibly clear for the justification of their own sins. The reason I wanted to bring up my two psychology points is because it shouldn't surprise us. And that's how it needs to be explained. Does that make sense? Because there's a lot of lost people in the world, and for some reason they think they're doing things different. Right? We're called to be different. They think they're doing things different by loving a group of people or loving this or loving that. They think they're doing things different. What they don't see is they're doing what everybody on planet Earth does. They are. Right? They're justifying. They're taking shortcuts around things that they're not comfortable with. Why? Because it's easier that way. If that's a sin that you struggle with, it's easier just to live in it. Just as any other sin, and that, just as lying, just as adultery, just as any other sin, the same lust, whether it's male, female, male, male, female, female, it's all categorized as lust, right? So they think they're doing things different, and everybody's just doing what the world has done since biblical times. We take the shortcut, we justify, and we say we're doing things different. Right? Beginning of time, this has been happening. So, should it surprise us? No. Does it need to be presented that way? Yes, because there's people who genuinely, wholeheartedly believe that they are being good reflectors or a light. Because why? They're loving. They're justifying under the guise of love. Now, I grew up with tough love. I believe in tough love. That's where truth comes in. If Brooks is doing something bad, is it my job as a father to justify it and say, oh, well, you know, terrible twos, and let him get away with it? Or is it my job to discipline him? Y'all probably have people in your life that are going down some nuts up paths. And it's our job to be the light that shows truth. And that gets taken nowadays. It's obnoxiously twisted. When you speak truth, just like with all those comments that I had read, when you speak truth, what happens? Hate. Is that a new thing? No. What did Christ tell us? Blessed are those who are persecuted for me, right? These people are going to hate you, but they hated me first. Why? Because he just spoke truth the whole time. Whether it was uncomfortable, I guarantee the Pharisees didn't like the truth he was speaking, right? Because it was an attack on themselves. But he had an obligation and a duty to speak truth, just as we do today. So we're going to go down this rabbit hole a little bit. Again, this is something I was shocked when I turned the pages, because last week I read David and Jonathan. I just read the header, and I'm like, okay, cool. And then this week I started reading it, and I was like, oh, wow. They're going down some uncomfortable territory, which I was like, okay, I like conflict, right? So, okay. But I was genuinely surprised and happy that there are people out there speaking truth. Now, I do want to point out there are some cultural differences between today and back then. One of the biggest things that I read is that they shared a kiss before David left. How many people have read that you're supposed to greet people with a holy kiss, right? So is that different than their culture back then? Not necessarily. Is it described differently? I will say yes, and that's where people get nuts up. Here's what I want to say, a couple things. Let me find it here. It's kind of a long section that I don't have a ton of time to read, so I'm going to try to get some snippets. I do encourage y'all to read on whenever you get a chance. This is something definitely to delve into. 1 Samuel 20, really 19 and 20. So Jonathan made a covenant with the house of David, saying, "May the Lord call David's enemies to account." And Jonathan had David reaffirm his oath out of love for him, because he loved him as he loved himself. There's a couple instances that I'm going to brief over that I believe are going to be in your books. David saying that his love for Jonathan is greater than his love for his wives. That's the first thing that people point out and say, David and Jonathan had a homosexual relationship. Largely stemmed from this, largely stemmed from that. I asked an interesting question at our office, and I'm going to point this out. I asked a question at our office for those who had kids. If you had to choose between your wife and your kids, who would you choose? I think Dad even got asked that question, and he said he'd drop me off a cliff.
He said he'd drop me.
Oh, what? I thought it. Anyway, that's a great example, right? I'm very eating lunch with them too.
You thought you were.
Right. Going to Chevalier's. Great example. I wasn't going to use my parents because I didn't think he answered that way. But now I'm going to use them. Some folks' love for their kids or others is greater than their love for their wives. Now, I did appreciate in this aspect, this point out, is David had how many wives?
Quite a few
concubines, right? So would he be someone that we consider incredibly loyal? Faithful? Not necessarily. So, when we're comparing his love to his wives over his love to someone that he deeply cared for, it's back to the, who would you drop off a cliff, your wife or your kid? So, there are instances of love that supersede that of a spouse, especially in David's case. Now, not saying that he didn't love his wives, not saying any of this, but again, let's take ourselves back to this time period, and when David says these things, the only thing I can picture, genuinely, first of all, if
Did you have some incredibly close brothers when you were serving? Probably. I've got a lot of friends who served, who've grown relationships and have done things that will only bond each other probably for the rest of life. They've been through things, they've gone through things that have linked them. In this case, the words you hear is their souls were knitted, right? And we're taking this as an over-sexualized America, right? It's on every billboard you see driving through any city, right? Is something about it. We're taking this instance as we're sexualizing it. We're ingraining that, our culture, into the Bible. What we need to know is what their culture was to understand it. First of all, it commands you to greet a brother with a holy kiss. Now, we're going to describe the kiss here in a minute, and it's probably going to make some people uncomfortable. And when we get to that, what I want you to realize is that if I'm on my deathbed and my son's sitting on my side, guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to give him a big old kiss because I'm not going to see him again. Is that going to be sexualized? I don't know, and I could probably care less, right? I could care less. I'm a sports guy. Tom Brady. This is what I'm trying to get at is we sit here and this is, Harvey, I'm not going to kiss you after this lesson, I promise. I'm not saying this is how we need to go back to greeting people. What I'm trying to show is there's a cultural difference that makes this sound really weird. And if you don't ingrain yourself in that culture, then it's going to stay weird. Tom Brady bothers me. Kisses his teenage son on the lips when they see each other. That's how he grew up, right? He's kissing his mom, he's kissing his dad, and he kisses his kids. Do we think there's weirdness there? Now, outside looking in, we're like, okay, that's strange, right? But that's how he's grown up. This is the cultural norm for him. Does everybody in America, maybe not everybody, do a lot of people in America criticize it? Yes, they do. Does that mean that his intent is ill? No, it's not. Doesn't mean that at all. So there are still prevalent instances of this. And to ignore them is to completely ignore the time and the place and the culture. So we're going to keep reading. I guess I only have 10 more minutes, but we are going to get to this. Jonathan and Saul have a big blowing up, and that's where we're going to start. Jonathan got up from the table in fierce anger on that second day of the feast. He did not eat because he was grieved at his father's shameful treatment of David. Because what has happened? Jonathan's gone to bat for David, and Saul has sworn an oath to Jonathan that he wouldn't harm David. In the morning, Jonathan went out of the field for his meeting with David. He had a small boy with him, and he said to the boy, "Run and find the arrows I shoot." As the boy ran, he shot the arrow beyond him. When the boy came to the place where Jonathan's arrow had fallen, Jonathan called out after him, "Isn't the arrow beyond you?" Then he shouted, "Hurry, go quickly, don't stop." The boy picked up the arrow and returned to his master. The boy knew nothing about all this, only Jonathan and David knew. Then Jonathan gave his weapons to the boy and said, "Go carry them back to town." After the boy had gone, David got up from the south side of the stone and bowed down before Jonathan 3 times. When his face to the ground, they kissed each other and wept together. but David wept the most. So this passage gets twisted into they shared a passionate kiss. Is it passionate? Yeah. There's tears. There's sadness. And they do kiss. Out of the cultural norm? No. Jonathan said to David, "Go in peace, for we have sworn friendship with each other in the name of the Lord, saying the Lord is witness." Again, they swore what to each other? Friendship. With each other in the name of the Lord, saying the Lord is witness between you and me and between your descendants and my descendants forever. Then David left and Jonathan went back to town. So this is the departure scene that we have between David and Jonathan. Is it weird to read that as somebody who's lived and grown up in Bayfield, Colorado, and who sees your parents kiss, yes, but doesn't go around kissing other guys? Yes, it's probably weird. But can we read it for what it is? I hope so. What people take this as and what people portray this relationship as isn't like it. It's taking these couple instances that say their souls knit together. So what does that mean? Oh, they're soulmates. Really? Right? Who is David married to? Or get married to here in a minute? His sister, Michael. Or he's already married to him, sorry, at this point. We take this and we misconstrue it and then we use it as a loophole. When how many people can think of passages in the Bible that says that homosexuality is wrong? All of us, right? It's not just the Old Testament either. It's the New Testament and Corinthians. In 1 Corinthians, it addresses it blatantly. If you go back to the Old Testament, we have creation, the picture of how God meant it to be. And guess what's not there? Sin. Guess what's also not there? Homosexuality. Then we move forward. In Deuteronomy, we have clear-cut instances saying that it is wrong, that it is against God's law. So we take this clearness, this crystal-clear water, and we try to find something wrong with it. Do I do that on other things? Yeah, right? It's not that we don't do that. I'm a sucker for a loophole, right? My mom knows that. She used to tell me stuff, and I'd be like, well, I mean, technically what she said is, right? Did I know the intent? Did I know the meaning? Yes. The last thing I want to bring up, and I'm going to cut that short just because we're on a time constraint. I heard it put best by a guy that I listen to on occasion. There's this argument that people are born with it, and that you can't be born with something that's bad. You can't be born with something that's inherently bad, or and guys, I want to say that's a huge misconception, and I want to put this to rest. I love how the guy said it, and I'm going to reiterate it, and if I don't do a good job, I apologize, and we'll get back to it next week, and I'll clear it up. I was an incredibly angry child. I beat my brother a lot. Sorry, Kyle. Do I regret how I treated my brother? Yes. Did I do that from the time I was tiny? Yes. Does Brooks hit his brother? Yes. Is that still wrong? Yes. Guys, we are humans with human tendencies, human emotions, anger, I mean, how else do you want to put it? Do kids struggle with doing the wrong thing as kids? Yes. So how does that go to proving any point? That proves that we're human. That proves that we're all sinners. It proves that we've done things wrong from the get-go. My brother, not so angry. Me, angry. Did he struggle with different stuff? Yes. But can we get to the place where we can call sin sin? I hope. I hope so. And I hope that y'all are that light in other people's lives that aren't timid about calling out wrong. Whether it's this, or whether it's anger, or whether it's lust that's not, I mean, it's all wrong. We can get so nutsed up in arguing that we just forget it's wrong. We can get so nutsed up and are you born with it or are you not born with it? Well, we can argue that till we're blue in the face, but I do know as a very young child, and I watch my own kids, they're not perfect. They struggle with some anger, with some temper, are we supposed to divide them and say, oh, this one's not as bad, oh, this one's... No, we're supposed to call sin, sin. We're supposed to speak truth. What does that mean? Brooks is naughty a lot of times. What does that mean? If that's expressed at a young age from somebody, does that make it right? No. Why? Because that means you're trying to justify every sin. Guess what nobody intentionally wants to do? It's justify every sin, because you typically stand on the things that you're good at. So no, everybody's got their line. My mom and I used to talk about this a lot. Everybody's got their line. Their line of modesty, their line of this, their line of that, their line of this. We've all got our own lines, and even they have their lines. Well, it's not right to lie. Well, I've been lying since I could talk. Right? So are we going to justify everything, or are we going to call sin sin? Because you have to do one or the other. And that people have created arguments and ways to try and weasel out of that. But if you just keep it at the baseline generalities, is from the time kids can talk, they're probably doing something wrong. So we can't use that to justify it anymore, or we're going to have to justify everything. If we just read more of the Bible than a small snippet that we want, we understand their culture, well, now we can't use this as an excuse. We have to use something else. And guys, I know we're picking on this today because this is what the story is about, but you just list the sins in your life that you struggle with, and it's there. We all take shortcuts. That's why we all fall short of the glory of God. But our job, and that's why I love that we're in the Sermon on the Mount, because the calling's so high that we're saying, really? Right? The call's perfection. That never changed. The call never changed. People have doled it down because they say, hey, that bar's a little too high. The bar was always supposed to be too high. If the bar wasn't too high and you could get to heaven on your own merits and good doings, then what's the point in what we're doing here? Nothing. The bar is perfect. That's what we're shooting for. That's what we're striving towards. Don't lower the bar because you struggle. Raise yourself up because you know that you're supposed to be a reflection of Christ. I talked over to him one day, I'm going to go short. Everybody's going to be shocked. Thank y'all for being here.